Fight. Welcome to the Philosophy of Fighting Podcast with your hosts, Arturo and Anoop.
All right, guys, this is Arturo. I'm doing a solo episode on reasons why you should support and watch ONE Championship. And I'm solo today because Anoop is a UFC ho. Nothing wrong with that. UFC is awesome. I love UFC, but I do think this can be the year for ONE Championship. And I'm going to kind of go through some things about the reason why. The first one is they just came to America for the first time in Colorado and had their first card in America, Fight Night 10. Now, especially as it relates to UFC 288, which happened the day after, no bias here. That ONE Championship card was a lot more entertaining. I think of the 10 matches, there was 8 finishes. ONE Championship boasts the highest finish rate of any organization. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. But the real reason why you should support ONE Championship is their rule set. Their rule set is more entertaining, right? You have knees allowed to a grounded opponent, which could end up with more finishes, right? It can kind of nullify the grappling dominance that you might see in UFC that you may not like. There's also the reason of judging, right? We just watched Henry Cejudo lose a split decision that I think the public leans towards Cejudo a bit more than Aljo. And again, it's on that round-by-round basis where ONE Championship, they have rounds, but they judge it as a fight as a whole, right? You're not judging it round to round. So like those little differences can make a big deal. And that's even a big deal to make a splash in America because in America, we have the unified MMA rule set, right? Colorado accepted the MMA rule set that ONE Championship has. All right. And this is a big deal because they're the first and only state to do it so far. UFC and Dana have come out and said that they won't be hosting events in Colorado anymore. And that's a strongman move for sure. Will other states now be scared to open up to ONE Championship? Does ONE Championship exclusively go to Colorado now? I don't know. It's also, I don't know how good Colorado is because the fights happen in Denver. That's at elevation. I mean, it didn't seem to affect these fighters at all. I'm sure they all got there like 2-3 weeks before the fight and acclimated to that. But it is something to think about. It would be cool if ONE Championship does do better. More states do allow that rule set to happen. And who knows? Maybe UFC starts turning its corner. Maybe it's just the impetus for UFC to start putting push state athletic commissions to move to a rule set that allows more finishes, allows more entertaining, allows decisions that don't get as murky. That could be beneficial for everyone. And especially with the UFC not having a big fight lined up for this summer, there usually is by this point. Seems like prime time for ONE Championship to really move into the American market. Now, I won't lie. This Fight Night 10 had a bunch of matches that the critique was that their marquee stars were put against lesser competition, almost setting them up for wins. And there is some credibility in that. ONE's roster depth is not as deep as UFC, but I do think their top guys are comparable to the UFC top guys. I mean, we saw Mighty Mouse jump ship, right? He lost to Marias and then he won the next two. But it just goes to show you there is competition on that side for sure. Especially with ONE, you can kind of compare apples to oranges a little bit. ONE is not just MMA, right? On a ONE Championship card, you're also watching kickboxing, Muay Thai, and submission grappling. And if you're a martial artist, you appreciate those things. Even as a viewer that may not even partake in martial arts, that back and forth between different things, different styles will educate you more for sure. But it's also entertaining. You're not just watching the same thing over and over again. And I don't know. I love that personally. They even do mixed rules matches where we saw Mighty Mouse versus Rod Tang. And it was first round MMA, first round Muay Thai, second round MMA. You go back and forth. That's amazing. And you're taking the best Muay Thai guy versus the best MMA guy right now that you have. Who doesn't want to see that type of fight? With a bunch of athletes, that would be really cool. Imagine they start doing that in the US. Imagine they start doing that in the UFC. So these are things that you do want to support, I would say. So let's get a little bit into, I'll start with the owner. Chatri Sachdev. He is a martial artist. He started ONE Championship in 2011, and his goal was to kind of unify the Asian countries in their MMA promotions. And so that's where ONE Championship became the vision and the goal. Now they're starting to move. They are become the biggest international MMA organization. They're bigger than UFC internationally. But the American market, especially for MMA, is huge. All right. It's kind of like the Super Bowl. Super Bowl is one of the biggest things in the world. And it's larger just because the American audience drives it, right? It's not really big internationally. So for ONE Championship to truly have the success it needs, it has to break into the American audience. All right. Even though it's bigger internationally and UFC is trying to increase its international reach, the American audience is huge. Anyway, Chatri is a pretty good owner from what it seems. He's a martial artist himself. Anytime there's a win, when it's a finish, it's an automatic 50K bonus. On this last fight night, Rod Tang had an awesome KO. He got a $100,000 bonus. I mean, these are big bonuses. And the fact that it's not just given to knockout of the night or submission of the night, it's like, oh no, if you have a knockout, if you have a submission, a TKO, whatever it is, or just a good fight, you're getting a bonus. I don't know about you, but that's pretty awesome. And you can see its effect on all these fighters and how happy they are. And maybe that contributes to why they have such a big finish rate. Now, Chatri had described the first 3 years of ONE FC being a living hell. It is tough. I think they're still in quite a bit of debt. They are making a lot of money now, but of course, there's a lot of debt to pay for all these years. It's not easy to run a promotion, and they're going all in. And you want to support this, right? Because if ONE Championship's not doing the big things, then again, you have UFC running rampant. They're paying their fighters less. Maybe that doesn't affect you. I don't know. Or just maybe as a fan, you probably illegally stream UFC. ONE FC's cards are free for you in America. You can watch it on the ONE FC website, or if it's a fight night, it's on Amazon Prime. If you're a Prime subscriber, you can watch it. You can watch it live. You can watch it on replay. These are benefits, right? Like for UFC, maybe you don't support fighters getting more pay because you're like, I like to stream things for free. Like, I don't want to be, maybe you think of yourself as almost like a problem in that instance. I'm streaming it for free. Why do I care if the fighters get paid more? Right? You're like, otherwise you would pay for the pay-per-view if you truly believed it, like our friend Brian Persky believes. But for ONE FC, they're really trying to jump into this market. And why wouldn't you watch it as a fan for free? They're on Friday nights. Maybe that's your thing. I don't know. But again, you could just catch the replay for free. Anyway, let's get a little bit into fight night 10. Okay. And the reasons why I think this was a much better card than the UFC. So at the lineup, let's take a look at the lineup. Also, if you do jiu-jitsu, this is the only means in which submission grappling can pay well, right? These guys also get those 50K bonuses on top of their pay. Like Mike Musumeci, who's one of their stars, he's not doing any more tournaments. He's not doing ADCC. He's not doing No-Gi World. He's not doing these tournaments because he says, he's like, I can fight in ONE Championship every couple of months and make way more money than I'm making anywhere else competing double the amount of times. It's a no-brainer that the best should go to ONE Championship for grappling. You have the Rutolo brothers now doing the same thing. It's a huge outlet for these jiu-jitsu guys. I would say, you know, at one point, if you're in jiu-jitsu, ADCC used to be like the top honors, right? Like, oh, that's where I can win money. That's where I should put all my efforts into. But now that game is changing. I think ONE Championship is your new outlet. I think that's the way to go. That should be your goal. All right. Anyway, getting into fight night 10. So many finishes. One of the only decisions on the card was Ty Rutolo versus RDR, Reiner de Ritter. Submission grappling match. And they have an interesting rule set. It's a 10-minute round. One round, it's 10 minutes long. Submission only. If there's no submission, the next criteria is how many submission attempts. And these have to be legitimate submission attempts, like ones that really force an escape or near finishes. If none of those are there, then the next criteria is how aggressive you were in pushing the pace and going for all these things. Okay. Ty Rutolo won based on that criteria. He was more aggressive. RDR, when they made the decision, was very surprised because he did attempt a guillotine. I guess the judges didn't deem it to be strong enough of a submission attempt. I thought it was. Ty Rutolo had to do like a real good alligator roll to get on out. I thought it was a decent bite. I actually thought RDR might take it. But definitely, aside from that, Ty Rutolo controlled the match. And bravo to him, because RDR was much bigger than him. All right, cool. Another notable thing, Sage Northcutt, right? You might know his name. He hasn't fought in, I think, 3 or 4 years. He was a big up-and-comer. But when he did come up, he, you know, when he made the big stage in UFC, and then when he jumped ship to ONE, he lost his opening fight to Cosmo Alexander, 29 seconds in, KO. Cosmo Alexander is no punk, professional kickboxer. Incredible. So with that break, 4 year break, he comes back and gets a submission heel hook win in 39 seconds. Huge comeback. And you may or may not care for Sage Northcutt, but he is kind of a big deal. He's only 27 years old. He's been training MMA since 4 years old. He's one of those guys that has been training his whole life. Like, we talk about like the evolution of MMA, and he was supposed to be one of those poster childs to like really push it. At 9 years old, he was the first ever person to be on the Sport Karate magazine. He had won 77 World Youth Championships in karate. He was an undefeated kickboxer. I think he was 15-0. He competed in wrestling. I think he went to Texas A&M. Just incredible martial arts career, basically. I think he's got black belts in some traditional martial arts, a few versions of karate, taekwondo. I believe he's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. But anyway, he's a guy you do want to root for, right? A guy that maybe got a little bit too much too soon and took a little time off to really work on himself. And this was a huge win. Now, people are going to have that critique of Ahmed Ashtaba not being of the high caliber. But again, I don't know if that's a fair critique. Yes and no. And you might say that about a lot of these matches. You want, if you're going to sell your brand, your fighters sell it. How do your fighters get appeal? Well, they have to get wins, and they have to kind of be winning normally, right? Like, you have to build your fighters up a little bit, right? Like, this kind of what happens. That's why we have a bunch of boxers that build themselves up with 20 to 30 wins, and now all of a sudden there's hype on them, and now the things they say get more promotion and so on. UFC is not innocent here either. UFC does the same thing. They almost orchestrated their things for Royce Gracie to win, right? Even today, when a challenger challenges for the championship and they lose, or even if the champion loses, how many spots do they go back in the rankings? 1, 2. So they win again and there's a championship again, right? Boxing's not like that. When you lose to the champion, you usually drop down a bit. And it makes sense to me that if you were to lose in a championship, you'd be dropped down like 5, 10 spots, right? For the new blood to come up and now challenge. But we don't see that in the UFC. It's the same top five guys in every division for how many years? And how many rematches do we get over and over again? Why? Because it builds the rivalries. It builds the wins of those fighters. And now it sells your brand more. Okay, so the UFC is guilty of this same exact thing. So I don't know if this is a fair critique. In my mind, a fight's a fight. You don't have to be the better fighter. You just have to bring the better fight that night. It's still interesting. These are still professionals. And sometimes they are really close. We'll get into that later. So you want to root for Sage Northcutt. I think you want to see this evolution, right? Sage has also got wins by knockout, by submission, by decision. He's very well-rounded. You do want to see this next step in evolution. You want to root for Sage Northcutt. And what's also interesting about Sage Northcutt is I think his sister is also in ONE Championship as a kickboxer, if I'm not mistaken, which is pretty awesome. I think he has another family member, another sibling, whether it's a brother or sister, that also trains. So a family of martial artists. Who doesn't want to support that? All right. Anyway, moving on. The next fight was Roberto Soldic versus Sebastian Katastam. Now, Roberto Soldic is professional boxer, Croatian. He has that type of fear-inducing that Krokop had. He hits aggressively hard. It is something, he's a scary man. And they want to build this man up because he was a prospect that was just more recently signed to ONE. And even when he's fighting Sebastian, he was so aggressive that you're like, oh man, he's going to kill him. But what really was surprising is Sebastian Katastam beats him by knockout, TKO, in the second round. And so this just goes to show where you're like, on paper, you're like, okay, yeah, like they're building up Soldic. All right, they just signed him over. Let's make him verse someone. No pushover, but let's get him a win before we give him like a title shot or something like that. Lo and behold, he doesn't get it. Now, Soldic, who you may not know, he has some notable wins. Most recognizable would be DDP, Dricus du Plessis, who's challenging Robert Whittaker for the number one contender spot in the middleweight UFC division. He's 1-1 versus DDP. Actually, Soldic's first match with DDP, he lost with TKO of punches. His second match was a rematch, and it was for the championship. This is why that happened. And he won via KO in the third round. So Soledic is no pushover. If you think DDP is next in line to fight Adesanya, again, Soledic is also on that level. So something to keep in mind. But again, he just lost, 28 years old. All right, moving on. The next fight, again, another finish, super exciting. Cool. The next one, women's atomweight MMA, Stamp Fairtex versus Elise Anderson. Now, Stamp Fairtex is definitely one of their marquee fighters. It's definitely probably their most popular women's fighter. I love Stamp Fairtex. She's been training lifelong, Muay Thai kickboxer. She's now in MMA. She is entertaining. She makes those entrances to the cage where, you know, she's dancing her way through. It's fun. She seems super happy. Her style in the cage is incredible. She's 25 years old. When she was in Muay Thai, she was 64-17 with 5 draws. She competed for the ONE Championship Muay Thai belt. Now she's in MMA. And she won via body shot KO with a kick. It was pretty incredible. This is someone you definitely want to take note of. The atomweight division is an interesting one because of Stamp Fairtex. So Stamp Fairtex opponent, Anderson from America. Stamp Fairtex won the performance of the night with that. So she got a big paycheck. That also brings Stamp's record to 10-2. If you don't follow Stamp Fairtex, you probably should. She's probably their most notable female. Yeah. Her father is a former Muay Thai fighter. She got into Muay Thai to avoid bullying in school at the age of 5 with her father training her. She's the typical Thai fighter who started very early. And by 18, she would also start competing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. She even won a gold medal at the Slam CM Cup BJJ tournament for women's 58 kilo class. So yeah, she's very entertaining. All right. So we got Sage Northcutt, Roberto Soldic, definitely star, but Sebastian Katastam beat him. So that's interesting to see there. The next fight was submission grappling, Mike Musumeci versus Osama Omawai. I know Osama. He actually came into my gym maybe about a year ago. I had met him. He trains at Atos. We know some of the same exact people. Pretty cool. This match was all Mikey. Mikey was on offense, threatening submissions constantly. And great job to Osama for stellar defense the whole time, trying to get out of stuff. But he did succumb to a rear naked choke. Mikey's incredible. Now, if you don't know Mikey, he's probably, you know, with the Rotolo brothers, their most notable submission grappling star. Mikey is the definition of a jiu-jitsu nerd. If you don't know him, he looks like the very unassuming, let's put it like that. Very short, very mild-mannered, very nice, very sweet. Got glasses on all the time. Even when he finishes his match, he puts his glasses on right away. Big fan of pizza. And yeah, there's something very sweet about Mikey, very endearing. People love that about him, but he's a savage in submission grappling, especially for flyweight. I can't imagine there's anyone that's going to beat him. Now, Osama is a great competitor, just won Nogi Worlds. I think he only got his black belt maybe about a year ago or so, but this guy is super good competitively. I think he was 22-5 professionally coming into this match. Yeah, no pushover. He's legit. The next fight, their greatest Muay Thai fighter, maybe the greatest Muay Thai fighter right now, Rod Tang. If you don't know who Rod Tang is, Rod Tang is an animal and one of the scariest people I think you can fight. Rod Tang won with a vicious elbow that knocked out his opponent, Edgar Tavares, who's from Mexico. This elbow was brutal. Rod Tang is known for being able to take incredible punishment, give incredible punishment. His pace is so violent, so fast. And for this victory, Rod Tang got a 100K bonus, was super touched by it. Again, he has the kind of the typical Muay Thai fighter background, started fighting at 8 to make money and help his family. At 14, he moved to Bangkok, won his first title in 2016. And just has been on a tear ever since. And so much so, he's got 323 fights. When we talk about the most brutal sport is probably Muay Thai. This guy has 271 wins, 42 losses, and 10 draws. It is remarkable to watch him fight. Yeah. What's even cooler and gets even more respect is he fought Demetrius Johnson in a mixed rules match. Again, where we went, I talked earlier. First round Muay Thai, second round MMA, back and forth. DJ survived the first round of Muay Thai. And then the second round MMA came up. DJ beat him with a rear naked choke. I give incredible props because we watched the best Muay Thai fighter versus the best MMA guy. And good on them for both giving up their ego to compete against the other one. I think that match is a legendary match that we'll be thinking about and talking about for a long time. If you haven't seen it, see it. You'll familiarize yourself with Rod Tang. Watch some of his fights. Tune in when he's fighting. He's one of their marquee guys, if not the guy. Again, another flyweight. Where one championship really sells is those lighter weight classes. And what's crazy is how high their finish rate is in those lighter weight classes, because in UFC, the lighter the stars, the less likely finishes are happening. But this is not the case in one championship. Maybe one championship dominates the best athletes in those lighter weight classes. Who knows why this is the case? Or they just have bigger mismatches. That might be your conclusion there too. In either instance, entertainment value 99. The main event of fight night. DJ versus Adrian Marais, right? So most people, I think, know who DJ is. He's one of the GOATs, Mighty Mouse. Adrian Marais, this is their rubber match. They were 1-1 in the first match. Adrian Marais beat DJ with a knee to the head. I'd say DJ was kind of winning the fight up to that point. Second fight, Adrian Marais looks like he's winning it. And DJ finishes him with a knee. Incredible. Very, who knows who can win. Adrian Marais is a beast himself. And then this third match, Demetrius Johnson wins a convincing decision to lock it in. He doesn't know if he's going to retire yet. He is 36 years old, although Adrian Marais is 35 years old. It's incredible. Marais has a sizable advantage over him in size. He's definitely a lot bigger, looks a lot bigger. If you don't know Marais, he's a Brazilian fighter. Similar story that you hear. He got into martial arts because he felt like he wanted to defend himself, was being bullied. He took up Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Before that was judo and capoeira. Anyway, he's been fighting for a long time, and he's a beast, right? He beat DJ his first fight, finished him. I mean, that's no easy feat. Marais is 20-5 after this loss, and I'm sure he'll compete again. He's been competing with one championship since 2014, and he's been their flyweight champion pretty much since that point. He did lose it once in that time frame since then, but has won and unified. He went to the interim champion, then unified the championship, defended that. He lost it to DJ. But I mean, this guy's been a champion for a long time, taking on some real top guys and finishes, right? He's got a lot of finishes. He's got 4 knockouts and 10 submissions. Yeah, 14 of those 20 wins being finishes. I mean, that's a big deal. So it'll be interesting to see what's next for these fighters, right? Like, what's next for DJ? He beat Rod Tang in a mixed rules match. He beat Adrian Marais, who's definitely their best flyweight. But we'll see. Maybe there's some more interesting fights to happen there. But all in all, that fight card was incredible. Again, so many finishes, so exciting. I love it has that pride feel at the beginning of the card. You introduce all the fighters. They get their promos. They get that, you know, their visuals on the Titantron, their music. It's pretty cool. And it's even especially cool because they're all competing in different martial arts, right? So it's kind of cool to see all these guys getting their shine, meeting each other. I saw some cool videos in the back where Mike Musumeci met Mighty Mouse, and he sees Mighty Mouse's kids, and he asks, oh, do they train? And Mighty Mouse is like, of course, they both train in jiu-jitsu. And then you see Mike Musumeci rolling around with DJ's oldest son, and his oldest son's grappling, and Mike Musumeci lets him armbar him and stuff. So it's a pretty cool experience to see these things. It is entertaining. The only thing that you're going to get in UFC that you're not going to have in ONE Championship is the big trash talking. But if you're like me and you watch 288, when Sean O'Malley was talking and Merab came in and Aljo's talking at the same time as Sean O'Malley, you can't hear what anyone is saying. It just came off as like cringe. I don't know if it's the best look. I'm not even really that interested in those matchups personally. I watched this card, and I guess in comparison to, I'm all about this. So I hope I sold you a little bit on, you know, watching this fight night 10, watching ONE Championship going forward, or just in general, supporting what they're doing. Their rule set leads to more finishes. Maybe it pushes the UFC. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe they're in prime position to start making an influence on the States. Who knows what can happen, right? We hear PFL is trying to buy out Bellator. Does that mean they're absorbing the roster? Does that mean they're going to have a majority stake, a minority stake? Are they going to run it separately? Is Ngannou going to sign somewhere in one of these places? There's a lot to be decided on, and it seems like the UFC might be losing a little bit, right? They lost Ngannou. John Jones has probably one more fight versus an aging Stipe. Another guy lost. You're starting to lose a little bit of your power. And Adesanya has superstar power, but again, he's thinned out the division. He's basically fought everyone. Maybe there's another matchup or two left for him there. And then you have other fighters where, like, okay, Aljo's making a ton of wins. Are we really that interested? Most people don't even like him. All right, so it's interesting time for UFC and just the MMA community at large. But again, it might be a little apples to oranges because ONE Championship is not just MMA. All right, it's important to note that, like, you like Muay Thai or submission grappling, you're getting the best people here too. So I think as an overall martial arts experience, ONE Championship takes it, right? We're not going to have to watch a Kron Gracie butt scoot his way to Charles Jourdain for part of the match. We're not going to find that because those athletes are going to compete in their respective sports and not kind of taint the MMA. All right, I guess that's enough for me talking about ONE Championship, especially by myself. I really appreciate having a noob around to bounce things off of, but I appreciate you guys for listening to me. I hope I've influenced you even just a little bit. Please go check ONE Championship out. Thanks, guys. Bye. Thanks for listening to the Philosophy of Fighting podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or if you would like to fight us, send us a DM on Instagram @philosophy_fighting.